Dr. Hussein also asked about the issue of the CA19-9 earlier, and I'm just kind of curious. We asked the audience, Andrew, what about neoadjuvant therapy? This patient was resectable, of course, you know, 89 years old, but what about neoadjuvant therapy in the younger patient who is resectable? This is a strategy that has created a lot of interest. It actually looks like the audience leans towards doing that in a patient with 70 years old.
I think the audience might be doing a better job than we are. So when it comes to resectable patients, because we have a programmatic approach and we have a multidisciplinary team, we have to be fair to each other and set up practice guidelines within our group. Right now, resectable patients go to surgery first. But at the same time, neoadjuvant chemotherapy for this patient population is entirely acceptable and actually being studied in multiple ongoing studies.
So, of course, we want to ask where people stand in terms of adjuvant therapy, and I'm asking Margaret to respond because, as always, she gave a different response. But I want to hear how she approaches a 75-year-old patient who's gotten through surgery, and now you have the issue of adjuvant therapy. And Margaret, the audience looks like they're split between gemcitabine, which was the standard last year, versus FOLFIRINOX, with another significant fraction using GEM-NAB and a lesser extent gemcitabine. How do you think through the choice of adjuvant therapy, Margaret?
Well, I think the first issue is the fitness of the patient. Many patients following surgery aren't doing so well, and they might not be able to withstand the challenges, say, of modified FOLFIRINOX. So a lot of it has to do with fitness or ongoing morbidity, so I think you have to really assess that and choose a regimen that you think your patient's going to tolerate. So there's three choices here, basically. There's FOLFIRINOX, there's gemcitabine and nab-paclitaxel, and there's gemcitabine and capecitabine. And I use sort of a toxicity scale of 1 to 10, you know, where I put FOLFIRINOX up at about a 7 or an 8, and gemcitabine and nab-paclitaxel at maybe a 5 or a 6, and gemcitabine and capecitabine is a 2 or a 3. And so you can just kind of pick from that in terms of the fitness of the patient.
Interesting. You mentioned the use of GEM-NAB in the adjuvant setting. And actually, it looks like, Eileen, not very many people in the audience have done that outside a clinical trial setting. Have you?
So a couple of times, and in fact, it was both instances that I can recall were two individuals that had enrolled on the randomized study of gemcitabine and nab-paclitaxel compared to gemcitabine, and that's the APACT trial that we're waiting data from. And they got randomized to the control arm and were resourced individuals and elected their way to receive the combination outside of a study.
Interesting. Andrew, what about just using GEM-NAB outside a clinical trial? We really, certainly in the adjuvant setting, we don't really have the data. Have you done it?
I've done it before the recent data with modified FOLFIRINOX, and now with the data out with FOLFIRINOX, if I'm giving multi-agent chemotherapy, I tend to use that regimen instead.
Quick question from the audience specifically for you, Margaret, quote, do you still recommend gemcitabine to be given at 10 milligrams per meter squared per minute?
Well, it depends.
She always depends.
I often do that when I need to. Let's say I have a patient who's on gemcitabine and nab-paclitaxel 3 weeks out of four, and they're not tolerating it. They're having myelosuppression, just not doing very well. So I give it every other week, but I give it with fixed dose rate gemcitabine. There is an incremental, small, tiny benefit with fixed dose rate gemcitabine. That was shown in an old ECOG study. It just wasn't a game changer. But there is a little bit of benefit. So when you're tweaking things to try and improve the patient's situation, I think it's a reasonable thing to do.